Yeah, this is Ziggy Marley. You're listening to KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and 98.7 in Santa Barbara. It's really powered by the people. Keep it locked.
And don't let anybody make you think that God chose America as his divine messianic force to be a sort of policeman of the whole world. God has a way of standing before the nations with judgment, and it seems that I can hear God saying to America, you are too arrogant. And if you don't change your ways, I will rise up and break the backbone of your power.
Hotep, which in the language of ancient Egypt means we come with justice in peace. Welcome to Freedom Now, a Saturday Pan-Africanist and Internationalist World Affairs program. Freedom Now is committed to the principle of the rights of all peoples and nations to self-determination. We thank you deeply for your contribution to KPFK, which permits programs like Freedom Now to stay on the air. In this era of corporate acquisition and co-optation of all dissident media, we provide the microphone challenging their corporate and racist point of view. So stay tuned for Agenda here at Freedom Now.
Fellas, I'm ready to get up and do my thing. I want to get into it, man, you know.
Freedom Now.
Peace, hoteps, and wisdom to all of our faithful and devoted listeners out there in the radio verse. This is Brother Brandon Sankara, and I want to start things off again with a thank you to all our loyal listeners out there who continue to support Freedom Now. You keep us on our mission and allow us to bring you our agenda for today, July 18th, 2020. We begin with Sister Luyanda Kaboka giving us the historical drumbeat calendar for the week, reminding us that every day is a day in African history. After that, General Jeff of Skid Row will be back on the horn with us to update us further on the issues discussed the last time he was on the show. How has the situation been developing for the Skid Row community as the city of LA goes back and forth with shutdowns and reopens amid this COVID-19 pandemic? General Jeff is, as usual, on the front lines, and he's here to take us there as well, right from the comfort of our own homes. Next up, I'll be joined on the line to talk to Miss Yolanda Beckles, a representative of the Inner City School District Association, a group organizing to defund the Los Angeles Unified School District and establish a community-governed school district. More importantly, she's a parent who's working tirelessly to improve educational outcomes for her children and Black students throughout our community. After that, we will then be rounding things out with Dr. Gerald Horn, who has his ears to the streets of Pan-Africanism as usual, and you will want to make sure that you are keeping up with what's going down so you do not want to miss this one. I'm going to again be on these ones and twos as we pour this knowledge, making sure your mental cup runneth over with revolutionary wisdom right here to quench your mental thirst on Freedom Now. KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and KPFK.org on the web. Now, people, get ready for this train of coming, taking you closer to mental liberation, and stay tuned for the beat of that historical drum.
Buenos días. This is Sister Luyanda Koboka with the African Drumbeat Historical Calendar, with critical dates and events in humanity's struggle against the greedy profiteers of the imperialist nations. July 18, 1964. The Whites' Rebellion breaks out over the issue of police brutality against African men, but was the tip of the iceberg of African people's frustration with the racist structure of the U.S. government. The Whites' Rebellion and the subsequent rebellions and the Black Power movement throughout the United States ushered in an era of appeasement, with Africans in the United States being given access to European universities, jobs, military, non-profit funding, housing, and much more, all in an effort by the ruling class to co-opt the potential revolutionary growing consciousness of the masses. They also wanted to demonstrate to the world, and especially the newly emerging African and Caribbean countries, that the U.S. was removing the old shackles of segregation and ushering a new era of integration. The U.S. was competing with the Union of Soviet Socialist Republics for ideological hegemony throughout Africa, Asia, and Latin America. July 18, 1936. The start of the Spanish Civil War, which by many was considered the most important social revolution in Europe of the 20th century. Workers organized self-managed factories and peasants organized voluntary collectivization of villages and farms. This was the first European war against fascism, which would come to characterize Germany and Italy and lead to World War II. Many anti-fascists of all nationalities, in the spirit of internationalism, joined the ranks of anti-fascists in the civil war against General Francisco Franco, who overthrew the democratically elected Republican government. The fascists included the landed elites, the urban bourgeois, the Roman Catholic Church, and other conservatives who fully supported the rise of fascist state of Spain. July 19, 1928. Nwanyeru, led by Aba rebellions of 1928 in Nigeria. Nwanyeru, together with a cadre of women, forced the British colonialists to abolish a tax they had wanted to impose on women for being women. Their action sparked continued anti-British agitation. July 19, 1979. The Sandinistas, a mass-based Latin American movement to liberate Nicaragua from the fascist Somoza dictatorship, which the United States, the CIA, and multinational corporations had propped up for more than 30 years, ascends to power, providing social programs and economic reforms that uplifts the quality of life for the workers, peasants, and indigenous people of Nicaragua. July 20th, 1925. Franz Fanon, an African born in Martinique in the Caribbean, was born. He was educated at the Sorbonne of France in psychology and became a leading Pan-African militant in the National Liberation Front of Algeria, which led to the Algerian Revolution against French colonialism. He authored numerous books on the psychology of oppressed versus the oppressor, including The Wretched of the Earth, a mandatory reading for the Black Panther Party, SNCC, and numerous revolutionary movements throughout the world. July 21st, 1967. Albert Luthuli, author of Let My People Go, the autobiography of a leading African National Congress traditional chief who leads the struggle for freedom from the racist South African regime. July 21st, 1982. The settler colonial Zionist state of Israel invades Lebanon in a feeble attempt to destroy the PLO and the Lebanese resistance movement. Tonight, we interview one of the foremost experts on Zionism and the relationship to Lebanon and the United States. July 22nd, 17th century. Awa Shanks, a Native American woman warrior who fought the English to a standstill based upon a Native American confederation to repeal all whites from the native lands. July 22, 1796. 600 freed Maroons immigrate to Halifax, Nova Scotia, Canada, from Jamaica in an effort to establish a free society. July 23, 1952, Egypt breaks from the British neo-colonial regime of King Farouk and state power is seized by the secret society of dissidents known as the Free Officers Committee, headed by Gamal Abdel Nasser. This signifies the return of Egypt, or Kemet, to its independent status as a free African state devoid of European control. July 23, 1892. His Majesty Haile Selassie Jah was born. Haile Selassie, the last emperor of ancient Ethiopia, was the leader of African resistance to colonialism, hence has become the god of living truth for the Rastafarian movement and a central reoccurring theme in reggae music and among all Pan-Africanists. Ethiopia, the birthplace of all humanity, the first Christian state, the only country in Africa not to be successfully colonized during the European terrorist assault upon Africa, is the most mentioned country in the Bible, whether said to be Kush, Abyssinia, or Ethiopia. July 24, 1914. Marcus Mosiah Garvey begins organizing the Universal Negro Improvement Association, an African Community League in Jamaica, to become the largest black organization worldwide up to and including today. Its slogan, Africa for the Africans, becomes the war cry for over 53 African nations fighting colonialization. This has been Freedom Now's weekly historical component here at KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles, Southern California, always streaming live worldwide on the web at kpfk.org. So please join us wherever you are in the words of those on the motherland and in the diaspora as we chant Amandla, which means power, and the response is Awetu, which means is ours. The power is ours. Amandla,
Awetu.
Amandla, Awetu.
Amandla, Awetu.
And we're back on Freedom Now, KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, and we're joined on the line by none other than General Jeff, representing Skid Row, to give us some updates on what's happening with our brothers and sisters down there. Take it away, General Jeff.
Hey, this is General Jeff. Thanks for having me on Freedom Now, you know, coming with our Skid Row update. You know, there's a very, very interesting array of topics that, you know, we want to update your listeners on. Something that's interesting that popped up in the news, because we're wondering, first, let me just, you know, preview it by saying, you know, we're wondering why the mayor is pretty much MIA in terms of like boots on the ground, on the front lines in Skid Row, helping to facilitate and lead by example. You know, in terms of a global pandemic, we need leadership with boots on the ground. And so we're not seeing our representatives. As you all know, our city council representative, Jose Huizar, has been arrested, and I believe he's out on bail right now. And so, you know, we're looking for our other representatives from the city. And so a story just broke where an LAPD officer that was on the mayor's detail is now suing the city because of unwanted sexual harassment and sexual advances coming from Mayor Garcetti's chief of staff, who is a knowingly gay male. And so, you know, those allegations are pretty strong, and we're thinking that that is a reason why the mayor has failed to show his face in Skid Row, to, you know, to give us any type of assurances, you know, just by physically seeing our mayor, you know, especially with our city council rep not being there. You know, we need to see and be reassured that, you know, the city of Los Angeles, our representative, care about us, You know, even discussing the issues with us. We just don't have enough information. We don't have enough real-time information. We're not seeing any new solutions. And pretty much everything has become stagnant. And so there is a federal lawsuit going on in front of federal judge David O. Carter. And there's supposed to be a hearing this week, but it got postponed because of the new COVID restrictions coming from Sacramento, from Governor Gavin Newsom. And so, you know, and I want to give props to the federal judge Carter. He called me personally and apologized to me on behalf of apologizing to the entire Skid Row community, because he felt really extremely bad in having to postpone you know, the hearing, the court hearing. But because of the new restrictions, you know, he was anticipating, you know, because the lawsuit involves the city of Los Angeles, the county of Los Angeles, Caltrans, LASA, the Los Angeles Homeless Services Authority, and many, many other entities. And so he felt like he may have closer to like 60 to 70 people in his courtroom, including the LA County Board of Supervisors and their staff, the Los Angeles City Council and their staff, and it'd just be a courtroom full of folks, and it actually would be virtually impossible to have appropriate social distancing. And he felt that these issues are too cumbersome to, you know, have, you know, take over like two or three courtrooms and spread everybody out, and it just wasn't the timing was, so that from a logistical standpoint, they've got to work some things out. So the judge, again, he called us and apologized directly to us in Skid Row because he had to postpone the court hearing, and, you know, didn't want to make it seem like, you know, he doesn't care about the issues that we're having here on the streets of Skid Row. And so I thought that was honorable and it was respectful. And so we're sharing that with our community. But at the same time, you know, where is our mayor? And so with lawsuits going around in-house, you know, and then plus two, we're concerned because taxpayer funding, even if that settlement from the lawsuit by the LAPD officer, if it goes into settlement mode, then the city of Los Angeles will wind up taking taxpayer money, including money that would go to address COVID and to address homelessness, and it'll go to settle this lawsuit where, you know, recklessly chief of staff has been flirting with the, you know, the secured mayor's security detail for years. And so, you know, this is frustrating. You know, we're trying to get some new money in. There's, you know, conversations with Congresswoman Maxine Waters. You know, she had her Ending Homelessness Act on the table in Washington, D.C., $13 billion, and we're waiting to hear from that because there's just not enough funding, no matter, or not that it's not enough funding, but the funding, whether it's on a local level, a state level, or a federal level, just seems to keep evaporating in the thin air. And so it's very, very frustrating. And one thing that I really want to bring to the attention of your listeners is that there's a new, I can't say it's a concern. Well, yeah, it's a concern, but it's a very, very interesting nuance here in Skid Row, because our community is majority black folks, you know, from the hood, majority African-Americans from South Central, Compton, Watts, and those types of nearby communities. You know, a lot of people have born and raised, you know, with the gang culture. The street gang culture is prevalent in every neighborhood in black community. And so in Skid Row, it's extremely uncomfortable to be having a lot of strange looking people walk around you with their face covered. Because, you know, coming from the streets, it seems as though, you know, if you see somebody with their face covered, that they mean business and they're up to no good. And then you're going to act accordingly. And so a lot of people, even though it's COVID and everybody's wearing masks and it's mandatory to wear a mask, it has now gone on for so long. We're into like some, you know, months now, months later, and our street code is starting to take over COVID code, if you will, the COVID regulations. And so folks are saying, hey, man, I don't know who you are walking up on me with this mask on. I feel extremely uncomfortable and feel like my life is being threatened. I have to defend myself. And so now there is a time where you had everybody on edge because everybody's walking around with masks on. And then finally folks are saying, hey, man, I don't have COVID. Take that damn mask off. I need to see who the hell you are. And that's like the current culture that's going on in the streets of Skid Row, which may, you know, why, you know, who knows what that's going to lead to. Is that going to lead to an uptick in COVID? Or is it going, I don't know. I don't know. It's a brand new thing that we're just noticing. And, you know, how do we address that? So it's something, you know, if we contact the Department of Public Health and ask, or the CDC, and ask for expert advice, you know, are we going to get blamed for snitching? You know, if it becomes mandatory, and are they, what are they going to do, police Skid Row at a harder level? And try to ticket people that don't have their mask on to pay fines and fees that, you know, we can't afford anyway, you know. And so there's a lot of question marks that still exist. And so our Skid Row Neighborhood Council Formation Committee, we have an upcoming meeting scheduled, and we're going to discuss this at length to try to figure out what we need to do to discuss that. And so, matter of fact, there's so many issues going on. I've got the issue going on right now with a homeless trying to find housing for a couple of homeless women with children, and it's getting late and the shelters are about to close. So actually I got to cut this update a little bit short because I got to go, you know, tend to the community. That's my time. Thank you for the update. We'll talk next week. Thank you, KPFK. Thank you, Freedom Now.
You and I cannot be free in America or anywhere else where there is capitalism and imperialism until we can get people to recognize that they themselves have to make the struggle and have to make the fight for freedom every day in the year, every year, until they win it. Thank you.
Welcome back to Freedom Now here on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and streaming live online at kpfk.org on the web. This is Brandon Sankara holding it down on this lovely Saturday, and I'm joined on the line by Sister Yolanda Beckles, who is a parent, soldier for the people, and a representative of the Inner City School District Association, a group working to defund LAUSD and build a community-governed school district. They've begun hosting info sessions every Thursday via Zoom to bring people up to speed on their efforts and to garner support. And Ms. Beckles is here today to spread the word to all of you. So how are you doing today, Sister Beckles?
Hi, everybody, and welcome to the Parent Revolution for Black and Brown Children. Time to stop talking, time to start doing. I'm very excited to be interviewed on Brandon's show because we can reach those young warriors who are really changing the world right now through Black Lives Matter.
Hey, right on, right on. Well, to get things kicked off, I want to start by giving a little bit more background on you and your experience being a parent with students going through LAUSD. Like, what was that like for you and your children, and how did it spark the parent activism that you display so proudly today?
So I arrived Christmas Day 2007 in Los Angeles to make TV documentaries about education. That's what I was doing when I left England after running a very successful business and nonprofit for minority students in the UK. And when I got here to make my TV shows, there was a writer's strike going on, so I wasn't able to be interviewed by William Morris, who was my agent at the time. And so it was recommended to me by my agent that I should talk to a board member, Marlene Cantor, and enter my children into LAUSD. At the time, I was a single mother. My oldest child, Deandra, was 13, and my youngest son, Ewan was 8 years old, and I put them in two schools in LAUSD, Bancroft Middle School and Selma Elementary, and they both came home after a week and asked me had they done something wrong. And I said, what are you talking about? They said, this is not a school system. People here really don't want to teach us how to learn, and we don't understand why somebody like you, mommy, that's all about education, 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 would do this to us. So I was like, well, it can't be that bad. I mean, in England, both my children were privately educated, even though I myself had gone through the public education system. And so I thought, well, let me go and look at these schools, because they can't be that bad. And I spent a week in both of their schools in their classrooms. And let me just say, when I originally arrived at the school, they were very hesitant to let me go into those classrooms. And I insisted that I had a right as a parent to sit in those rooms. And so there began my activism work in Los Angeles Unified School District. I then came that at the end of that day, went and spoke to both those principals and said, I want to get involved in these schools. If my children have to be educated in this system, I need to be involved. And I have now spent the last 12 years, this will be my 12th year in Los Angeles, being an activist in the public school system for over 10,000 families and their children. I then, at the age of 50, I met my new partner here, Carlton, in America, and I had another child at 50 years old. And I started the whole process all over again by entering Camille into LAUSD. And after 1 year, I said, okay, I can't do this anymore. Because I would then, at being 50, I'd be working until I was 80 years old as an activist in the system. So I decided to support my daughter in moving out of the system, because after a year of being in her classroom and not learning one thing in that kindergarten class, and her teacher rightly was very upfront with me and said, you are an involved parent who educates your child prior to them starting the school system. So when they walk in here at the age of 5 and 6 years old and they can read and they can count, that's all we're meant to teach them in kindergarten. And you've already done that. So for a year, my youngest child was now an assistant again in a classroom teaching the majority of her class, which was English learners, how to read and how to count. And I just thought, I can't have her for the next K through 12 years doing that in the system. So I went, visited 15 schools. LAUSD gifted magnet, LA charter schools, private schools, and she won a scholarship to go to a private school in Culver City that I'm very happy with right now.
Okay, and I'm further on the topic of parent engagement and your activism journey. You, similar to myself, stumbled upon a man by the name of Dr. Michael Beatty, who we've had on the show a couple of times over the past couple years. We've heard from him the back and forth struggle that he's had fighting to get people to recognize the failures of LAUSD and to empower both parents and students. So how did you guys connect and begin working together?
So if you've heard Dr. Beatty on this show, you know he's a no-nonsense African-American genius. And his focus only is mathematics and science. So I met Dr. Beatty halfway through my journey here. I met him about 6 years ago. I was at a conference. I was speaking about my involvement as a parent in the school system. And he was also a speaker at that conference. And at the end of that conference, I went up to him because I was just so blown away at the activity he did with the Black families and the children. And Professor Beatty is no joke. I mean, he went up to me and he said, oh, you know, you're running around killing yourself. When you're ready to really talk, let's talk. So we didn't talk again for another 4 years. I thought he was rude. I thought he was obnoxious. I said, okay, Mr. PhD, I will come back to you when I know I'm ready. So then we were at another conference 4 years later, and I went up to him again, but this time I was actually armed with something, because I had been on the Parent Advisory Council. For those parents who don't know about that, that's the leading parent organization in LAUSD that is the voice of all Title I parents. And I was a Title I parent representing a million parents. And I showed Dr. Beattie the math data. And I said, Dr. Beattie, the district said it's not doing that badly in mathematics. And he laughed at me. And I said, well, why are you laughing at me? I've been to 53 meetings. I'm on my school site council chairperson. And I gave him my long resume of my parent involvement. And he said, with all due respect, Miss Beckles, you don't even know what you're looking at. And he was, and it was bang on. I then spent the next month, I went down to his STEM lab in South LA, and he changed my life. He really woke me up to all that commitment and involvement I had done 10 years, 9 years earlier was not a waste of time. I think, you know, when we trained the parents and I went and advocated in schools and I sat in IEP meetings, I had given a lot to my community of black and brown parents and white parents of special needs children. But what he woke me up to was how powerful data is. And you can talk and you can become emotional and you become spiritual. But until the data says what it needs to say to you, you're not really saying anything. So I went and spent about a week at the lab with him, showing him all the meetings I'd been through, all the papers I'd been given by LAUSD. And he broke it down to me in a way, as a parent, I could finally understand and articulate to other parents. So I went back to my PAC meeting the following week and I called a motion on the floor that we should have him come and present, and the district didn't want that to happen. And I just was like, well, why not? He's a professor in mathematics, he's an educator, he has a PhD. Why do you not want this black man who's knowledgeable to come in here? And then I realized it's because they really didn't want us to know what he knew. And so I decided to form a partnership with him, and we have now been business partners for the last 3 years. He totally has empowered my thinking around parents, and he has come and trained now. We have trained across LAUSD over 200 parents who now understand how to support their children in math. And I just feel blessed that we have this man. He's 70 years old. So, you know, God forbid anything should happen to him in this pandemic. He's healthy and well right now. But we have to really take his knowledge and his brilliance and move it to the next level. So that for me, he's like the godfather of education for me now in America. I don't hear anyone else, Brother Brandon, talking the way that he talks. No matter where I listen to on CNN, on Black News, on Black Culture News, no one has that passion and that vision to finally say we need to stop this conversation and do something different. So I'm really empowered to be a part of this team that is creating the opportunity for black and brown families to truly take control of the education of their children in part of, and let me say, it's not going to be across the whole of LAUSD. Dr. Beattie is focusing on the district that has the most African-American students. It happens to be Board District 1, which is Dr. McKenna's district. That's the largest percentage of black children that attend schools in LAUSD. And he is focused because that's where he is. He's in South LA. He lives there. He works there. He created one of the most successful schools in the area 5, 6, 7 years ago called View Park, which is now a successful charter school. He was one of the founders of that. But he wants to do this across the masses. 126 schools could become part of this vision of this inner city school district that we're trying to create. So please, parents, you know, I know that some of you go in those schools every day and you go in the parent centers and you visit your child's classrooms. But I have to be honest with you, you can go to that board district, to that classroom, million times. I did it for 12 years myself. And at the end of the day, it really won't make the kind of impact he's trying to make. Yes, my children have been successful, and there have been others whose children have been successful, but he's talking about raising the mathematic achievement of all black children in LAUSD. And right now, they are the lowest performing children in the country. when it comes to math. He has produced the Black Zero Index, which tells you for the last 15 years that over 100 schools that have black children in it are at zero. Zero proficiency. We have got black children who are walking across this country who graduated with LAUSD who are math and science illiterate. Illiterate. They don't know how to add, subtract, divide, and multiply. And that, my people, is criminal. It's criminal.
Okay, I can dig it. So for our listeners out there, I want to remind you that you are tuned into Freedom Now on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles. This is Brandon Sankara on the line with Sister Yolanda Beckles, parent and representative of the Inner City School District Association. Now, this is a revolutionary concept that is really a microcosm of what we see on the national scale as we call for a revolution to change the system of government in the country as a whole. So the effort of you guys with the ICSDAI is calling for a change in the system of education because, you know, there's no reforming LAUSD. They've been getting millions of dollars year after year. However, outcomes remain the same and remain abysmal. So, of course, you know, the first response you get from people to such an idea is skepticism and of the feasibility of such a grand task. So with that, Ms. Beckles, can you help our listeners understand what does it mean to start a new school district and what does that process look like?
So let me say this in the climate of what we're watching right now, following the terrible murder of George Floyd. Is that we have watched a movement called Black Lives Matter change the world. So first I need to say to the listeners out there that nothing is impossible and change is change. And so when you hear that it's possible, believe me when I tell you, you wouldn't have this brilliant genius helping us to really change the educational lives of our children without there being some form of data and history to this. So this isn't new. Let me say that to you. And let me also say in the last kind of 10, 20 years, white people have also taken the decisions that we're about to take and moved it. The Pacific Palisades is a school district on its own. A group of white parents, middle-class white parents, came together and said, you know, this system, public school system in LAUSD is failing our children. We are going to get together and we're going to do something about it. And it is a process. And it is a process that is not an overnight change. You have to galvanize, develop, encourage, and get parents and the community who live within that board district to say this is something that we want. Now, why would we not want it? I've already told you, black children are the lowest performing children in Los Angeles Unified School District when it comes to math and science. So are Latino and Hispanic communities. They're only doing 30% better than we are. When you compare that to the Asian and the white students in the same school district, they're at 70 and 85%. So, parents, community members listening to this call, we have no choice but to do something and do it now. So what is the process? The process is that we have to find 25,000 to 40,000 signatures to petition the Los Angeles County of Education, which is LACO, about the reason why we need to make this change. And what's so easy is that we already have all the data. The data speaks for itself. 30 years of failing to educate black children. So the argument isn't going to be difficult. What we have to do is galvanize the support to educate the community that this has got to be the alternative, because we've given the district 30 years to get it right for black children to close the achievement gap, and they haven't. So we have to galvanize those signatures. We have to come knock on your door, talk to you, educate you, show you the data. We're currently doing that right now through Zoom calls. So I hope next week some of you will register, and I'm sure Brandon will share that data with you and start getting us to be talking in our homes with our grandparents, our aunties, our uncles, how we start to educate our community on how we make this change. Just like defunding the police, we are not defunding the whole of LAUSD. We're only going to be taking over Board District 1, which has 126 schools. There are 786 schools in LAUSD. So we will not be taking over the whole of LAUSD. Let me be clear on that. It's just South LA is our focus, because that's where the black students are. So we will go through this process. We'll galvanize support. I don't think we'll have a problem raising those signatures. I think a lot of our parents right now, I get phone calls because, like Dr. B's STEM lab, I have a STEAM shop next door to him because that's how close I want to be to this visionary. So we have parents coming in my shop every day asking me they're not taking their children back to LAUSD after the debunkle on this whole online distance learning program. So they're looking for alternatives. So this is where the conversation starts. This is one of the alternatives, to take back the schools and let them be run by people who know what they're doing. So there is a process. We go through the signature part. Then once we've done the signature part and that we pass that stage, we have to then go to the state. If the state says yes, you have a plan, then we have to teach everybody what the plan is. And there is a plan. 20 years ago, a group of black professionals in Los Angeles created this same strategy. But as always, when you do something and you don't have the whole community supporting you, it got sidelined and pushed into another direction, which is where the whole charter movement grew, because they couldn't actually get what they wanted to happen. But this time, I'm telling everybody on this call, it's going to happen. Just like with the Black Lives Matter movement, everyone has realized we can't have the police as it is anymore. We have to do something different. And this is exactly the same model in education. It cannot continue the way it's continuing, and we have to have something different.
Hey, and that right there is a perfect place to wrap things up, because we can go on all day on this topic. But for our listeners, if you want more information on the Inner City School District Association, you need to be on the Zoom call this coming Thursday from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. using the meeting ID 323-601-7209, or go to michaelbeatty.com/discussion. And Beatty is spelled B-A-T-I-E. Again, that is this coming Thursday from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. on Zoom. And the meeting ID is 323-601-7209. This discussion series will be held every Thursday for the next few weeks, so do not miss it. Sister Beckles, please let the people know where they can find you and get in contact with you all and, you know, possibly get involved.
Thank you, Brandon. I'll just give out my social media. So our website is www.theknowledgeshopla.com. That's our website. If you go on our website, it will show all the programs that Dr. Beatty and I do together, our work, and it gives you access to all our social media. So please, black parents out there, this is the call to action. I'd prefer you don't come and complain to me in a year's time when the revolution's in full swing. You want to join it now. We need you. We must have you. We must have your grandparents, your aunties, your uncles, your nephews. They all need to be a part of this, your church people, your community. So thank you, Brandon, for doing this. And I hope we get more conversations continuing on your Freedom radio station. Thank you.
This is Freedom Now on KPFK 90.7 FM in Los Angeles and streaming live online at kpfk.org on the web. When we come back, you'll be hearing from none other than Dr. Gerald Horn. So stay tuned.
Become a member of your favorite radio station. Log on now to kpfk.org.
In this time, time of social distancing and staying apart, it's important for us to pull together. Pulling together is doing things for others we should have been doing all along, but this time from a distance. Wear a mask, wash your hands, clean and disinfect recently touched areas. Let's all pull together and do our part to stop the spread of COVID-19.
Put a value on your favorite KPFK programs. Call now and pledge your support. 818-985-5735.
Much has been made of the recent conclusion of the term of the United States Supreme Court. That is to say, the term just ended with important decisions on DACA, that is to say, the Dreamers, the children of immigrants who were born here in the United States, although their parents don't necessarily have documentation, and decisions as well on LGBTQ rights as well. This led some pundits to suggest that the United States Supreme Court is not as conservative as many have thought it to be. However, I think it would be premature to pop the corks on the champagne bottles. I would instead point you to a revealing column by the Supreme Court analyst Linda Greenhouse, where she pointed out that the Chief Justice of the U.S. Supreme Court, that is to say, the first amongst equals in terms of the nine justices, has a dual agenda, which is motoring along quite nicely as far as he sees things. Point number one in his agenda is to wreck rights applicable to most Black people, that is to say, affirmative action, that is to say, the Voting Rights Act of 1965. Recall that it was just a few years ago that Chief Justice Roberts was able to tear the heart out of the Voting Rights Act of 1965, making it much more difficult to have Black people cast a vote without voter suppression. And the second part of his two-part agenda is to expand religious sectarianism, especially for Euro-American evangelical Christians, the base of the Donald J. Trump coalition, and for conservative Catholics. So therefore, during this Supreme Court term, you saw these decisions that are going to make it easier to have funding of these sectarian religious schools. You also saw decisions that adheres to conservative Catholic doctrine insofar as it sought to restrain contraceptive devices for women. And you also saw decisions which allow religious schools to hire and fire on virtually any ground. That is to say, the United States, under Chief Justice Roberts' administration, is leaning dangerously towards being a kind of theocracy, that is to say, the mirror image of the Taliban in Afghanistan or the so-called Islamic State when it ruled a portion of Syria and Iraq, or Netanyahu's Israel for that matter. Listeners need to realize that this is not just coming out of the demonic brain of Chief Justice John Roberts. It's the culmination of long-term trends deeply embedded in the settler colonial project, which began with the invasion of North America by the English hundreds of years ago. And during the course of that invasion, you saw a reconciliation between Protestants and Catholics in particular, who had been warring bloodily on the shores of Europe, but were rebranded once they crossed the Atlantic as, quote, white, unquote. Now, part of this is detailed in my latest book, The Dawning of the Apocalypse, which goes into, for example, the mutual massacre that European Christians, European Protestants, European Catholics were enmeshed in. therefore, when the settlers revolted against British rule and set up the United States, it's no accident that the First Amendment to the United States Constitution called for so-called religious liberty, that is to say, further reconciliation, not only between Protestants and Catholics, but between Protestants, Catholics, and the Jewish as well, all rebranded as, quote, white, unquote, so as to better subdue and subjugate the indigenous and enslaved Africans. Now, fortunately, as far as we're concerned, the Haitian Revolution, 1791 to 1804, disrupted their diabolical plan. It led to a general crisis of the slave system in the Americas, which culminated with the abolition of slavery in 1865 in the United States. Therefore, black people went from being free labor to being cheap labor, which was less lucrative for this potent so-called white bloc to exploit. And then you saw that this cheap labor system was bolstered by the Jim Crow system of U.S. apartheid. But in the 20th century, you had the rise of national liberation movements in Africa and the Caribbean, and the United States found it difficult to win hearts and minds in their populations as long as people of African descent in this country were treated so horribly. And so you saw a reluctant retreat in the 1950s away the most horrible aspects of Jim Crow. However, these national liberation movements and their subsequent governments began to weaken when the government of Kwame Nkrumah in Ghana was overthrown by a CIA-backed coup in 1966. And then you saw another ally of Nkrumah, that is to say the socialist camp, began to erode with the collapse of the Soviet Union on Christmas Day, ironically enough, in 1991. And so now, as they surveyed the scene, Chief Justice Roberts and his comrades feel that black people in the United States have few global allies, so they're seeking to turn back the clock, further erode voting rights and affirmative action, and restore religious sectarianism. So one question is, how will black Christians respond? Will they go along with this effort to form a so-called Christian theocracy as planned by Chief Justice Roberts? Or will they see this as being inimical and hostile to their so-called race rights? Well, one straw in the wind is that the Hungarian-American billionaire, George Soros, who is routinely demonized by the right, has just made a substantial donation of hundreds of millions of dollars to the organization known as the Poor People's Campaign, led by the Christian minister, Reverend William Barber of North Carolina, who is seeking to walk in the footsteps of Martin Luther King Jr. and his Poor People's Campaign of more than a half century ago. Interestingly enough, Soros' foundation is headed by Patrick Gaspard, perhaps the most prominent Haitian American in the United States, a former U.S. ambassador to South Africa, who also happens to be quite close to the current mayor of New York City, Bill de Blasio. Since May 25th, 2020, and the tragic lynching on camera of George Floyd, headlines tell us that groups like the NAACP Legal Defense and Education Fund have received a $500 million, believe it or not, from various forces, many of whom are close to George Soros, but who are concerned with this rightward shift spearheaded by Chief Justice Roberts and Republican President Donald J. Trump. The question is, will this massive bet on the black community be enough to halt the turning back of the clock and the rise of a Christian theocracy as projected by Chief Justice Roberts? Stay tuned. This has been Gerald Horn for Freedom Now. Thank you.
In closing, we'd like to thank our guests, starting with General Jeff of Skid Row, for bringing us some key updates to the issues facing the vulnerable yet strong population of Skid Row. As usual, we stand with our brothers and sisters fighting to survive and thrive despite this pandemic. Thank you to Sister Yolanda Beckles for coming on air to represent and share with us the revolutionary efforts of the Inner City School District Association. If you want to find out more about their efforts to defund LAUSD and establish a community-governed school district, you need to be on their next info session this coming Thursday from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. on Zoom via the access code 323-601-7209. Again, that is this coming Thursday on Zoom from 6 p.m. to 7:30 p.m. via the meeting ID 323-601-7209. And lastly, a special thanks to Dr. Gerald Horn for once again expanding our quarantine knowledge base. And I hope that you listeners out there will continue to quench your thirst for information by finding his collection of books at a bookstore near you or online from stores like Esselwan Books in Leimert Park. We send a special word to Sister Tej and, of course, much love to Sister Luyanda Kaboka, bringing us the historical drumbeat calendar for the week, and our spiritual backbone, Baba Didan Kamathi, for always giving us the strength and motivation to bring you Freedom Now every week. Shout out to our engineer brother, Ricky, and last but certainly not least, thank you to all of our loyal listeners and supporters. It takes a village to build a revolution, and Freedom Now is a village to be reckoned with. This has been Brother Brandon Sankara, and you can join us on Facebook at Freedom Now Gerald Horn. You can email the program at freedomnow@kpfk.org or go online to our audio archives at kpfk.org. Scroll down to Freedom Now, and you'll be able to hear this program as well as 60 days worth of prior programming here at KPFK 90.7 FM. We now send you off to our sister Assumpta with Spotlight Africa, coming up next to address the issues facing Mama Africa. And until next Saturday here at Freedom Now, we stand running our marathon, ready for revolution.
Become a member of your favorite radio station. Log on now to kpfk.org.
Are you looking for a unique way to support Pacifica Radio in Los Angeles? KPFK's vehicle donation program not only supports public radio, but it helps you get a tax deduction too. The process is easy. Just call 877-KPFK-AUTO. That's 877-KPFK-AUTO.
Innovating dialogue, informative public affairs, news and information, innovative music, non-commercial, listener-supported, culturally diverse radio. We are KPFK.
KPFK thanks you. Listener supported.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Be yourself.
Volunteer.
Thank you for being a friend. Travel down the road and back again.
For your continued support. And keeping this radio station powered by the people.
Thank you. I'm gonna let me be myself again.
...2020 summer will never be the same. Radio Aphrodisia will bring you our concert summer series featuring giants of African music. Manu Dibango, Hugh Masekela, Fela Kuti, Richard Bona, Franco TP, OK Jazz, Konono, number one. Join us Saturday afternoon. Be there, Summer Concert Series 2020 with Namdi, Radio Aphrodisia, Showtime, 4 to 6 p.m. Be there.
This is Mumia Abu-Jamal.